Hi, folks. Welcome back to another episode of the Pilot Network podcast with Adam and Matt. Today, we are blessed, beyond blessed. We're lucky enough to speak to Chris Boom Boom Kresge, the owner, proprietor, and overall badass who runs Mil-2 ATP. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Oh, man, I couldn't be better. Up here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, it's February. Snow's on the ground. It's kind of a winter wonderland. I'll trade places with Matt down in Tampa. We all know how nice it is down there this time of year.
Yeah, it's sunny and 72 down here, which was a little bit changed from the last couple of weeks when I was up there with you, Boom Boom.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, unfortunately, old man winter is here again, and it's ice and sleet and snow outside and about 27 degrees. So,
oh man,
hopefully this is it for the year. Hopefully it'll start to warm up.
And you were having someone go through a 3-day course this weekend, weren't you?
Yeah, so... unfortunately, I was out on a United trip. I just got back this morning at about 5 a.m. I beat all the ice in. But I do know that he was able to fly yesterday, and hopefully he'll finish up tomorrow. Weather's supposed to be nice again, so hopefully he'll be done. And, yeah, you know, that's what we do. We get people their ATPs. So.
Well, I think Boom Boom knocked it out right there. He is the ATP guy, and his staff at Mil-2 ATP just got Matt Sweethrough the program, and they've done great work. But before we get to Mil-2 ATP and the nuts and bolts that kind of make that program tick, Chris, can you just give us a kind of brief synopsis of what led you into aviation? How did you get from little dude Chris to retired or finished up military pilot to flying the Airbus to open his Mil-2 ATP business? How did that evolve?
Yeah, you know, boy, there was a movie a while back called A Series of Unfortunate Mistakes. this was a series of fortunate mistakes. As a kid, when I was probably 6 years old, my dad started learning how to fly. And I just vividly remember him taking me flying as a youngster. And then when I was still a youngster, we moved down to Costa Rica. So that put a long hiatus on my flying dreams. And as soon as I turned 18, I moved back and enlisted in the Air Force. So,
you went the long route, the road less traveled.
Yeah, you know, I thought that too, but there was a lot of Mustangs in the Strike Eagle. I was surprised to see how many previous enlisted guys there were. We had everything from prior security forces in the Air Force to Marine grunts, and they're all doing very well. So it was good to see probably about a full 20% of the Strike Eagle pilots were prior enlisted, so that was cool.
Were you in active duty or guard reserve?
Yeah, I was active duty for almost 25 years.
Oh, we all make mistakes.
Yeah, it's all good. You know, I looking back, the only thing I would have done differently is about 10 years ago, I would have gotten into the reserves and gotten an airline job then.
Yep, that's about exactly where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I certainly had a great time. I ended up doing 6 back-to-back-to-back flying assignments, and in spite of that, still managed to make 05 and retire as an 05. So I can't complain. Well, but as I was retiring, you know, I decided that I didn't have a job. I hadn't planned on retiring. Even also, I woke up one day and said, this is no longer for me. And I walked into my boss's office that day and told him I was going to have shoulder surgery. I'd see him in 3 months. And oh, by the way, I'm also retiring. So he was less than pleased. But I decided I was going to buy an airplane, teach my kids how to fly. And the rest is history. I ended up buying a Seneca 2 and then talking it up at the squadron. There's just a bunch of guys that had to get their ATP knocked out. So we put together a school, applied for a 141, and we've been blessed and fortunate that people come from around the world to get their ATPs with us. So it's been awesome.
Why Mil-2 ATP? I mean, obviously the money piece and whatever else, I mean, that doesn't mean a hill of beans to most guys who end up launching their own project, something like Mil-2 ATP. So why all of a sudden go, you know what, I'm going to buy an airplane and I'm going to start teaching other dudes how to fly on the civilian side so they can go out and get that coveted airline gig?
Was there an entrepreneurial draw also?
My dad actually called himself a serial entrepreneur. He retired when he was 34 years old. So when we moved down to Costa Rica, he moved down there to retire, and he ended up opening, I think, 17 businesses. He's very successful.
Wow.
Yeah. That's probably awesome. Runs in the family.
Was he a pilot too?
Yeah. Well, he was. He did GA flying only. So he didn't get to do any of the military flying or commercial flying, but certainly he loved to fly. It was something he always kind of went back to anytime he decided he was going to take a vacation from work, which were few and far in between.
Yeah. Well, that's an awesome role model to have early on. That's the same way I got started too, is a close family member was a pilot, and it just, I never looked back after that.
Right. You know, and I was really fortunate to get to fly the Eagle and Strike Eagle. I don't want to be disingenuous for your listeners out there. absolutely loved the Strike Eagle and everything that airplane does. I got to do an exchange down in Argentina, a flying exchange down there. That was fantastic. I just don't regret any of the decisions I made, other than probably would have gotten out, like I said earlier, 10 years ago and then come back to retirement.
How difficult was the transition from the Cape doffing to being the MIL-2 ATP proprietor and the United pilot that you are today?
That's an easy question. I always just saw myself as a regular dude that happened to be fortunate and blessed enough to get to fly the airplane, the Strike Eagle. So I certainly did work with heroes, but I never considered myself one. So it was an easy, easy transition. You know, I think really humility is a sign of, I respect a lot of guys that aren't self-aggrandizing, quite frankly. As a matter of fact, all of my heroes are guys that are just humble and know that they're fortunate to be able to do what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I bet, man. I think that's a kind of a factoid about pilots just in general. A lot of self-deprecating humor out there. That is for sure. Sometimes it works on their behalf, and other times it kind of trips them up a little bit.
Cool. Tell us about the process of starting a Part 141 operation. I mean, that's got to be pretty difficult, huh?
Yeah, other than dealing with the FAA, it was actually just a matter of making the decision to do it and then just doing it. I was fortunate that, and I am fortunate to have a job with United. So, you know, I only work about 14 days a month. And so I certainly have a lot of time to dedicate to still building the business. Dealing with the FAA has been, it's been interesting. and that's all I'm going to say about that. But that's certainly the long pole in the tent, is conveying to the FAA your desires and then making it a reality. That certainly is the difficult part. But if you stick to it, I mean, it is what it is. You just got to get through the FAA's process. The part of it is, too, that the single best investment I made was hiring a competent, capable, and dedicated operations manager in Brittany Martin.
Yeah, I was just going to say, being up there, Brittany was amazing how she ran that place. You could be out flying the line and getting students through, but the organizational skills and just the general knowledge that she had on how to run that business was amazing.
Yeah,
and
I can
started off with zero GA time. She was an Air Force officer also. And she's an academy grad with an aeronautical engineering degree. But, I mean, everything that she knows has been, it's been a learning process, and she's just brilliant, quite frankly.
Yeah. So, the name is not a misnomer. It really is MIL to ATP.
Yeah, you know, most flight schools start off with a Cessna 150, and they work up from there. And we did the exact opposite. We started off with the half or mostly glass Seneca 2. And then somebody approached us and said, "Hey, do you guys do private pilots licenses?" And we went, "Yeah, we should probably consider doing that too." So yeah, now we're a full operation flight school. We've got two twins and three single engine airplanes. We're in the process of getting two more single engine airplanes. One of them will be complex, so we can do the commercial instrument. But I have that one on demand right now. But we'll get a full time one here hopefully in the next month. And yeah, it's been awesome. We no kidding have people come from around the world to get their ATPs with us, but now we've got people coming from around the world to get their private pilot's license with us, which is just dumbfounding me because there are certainly tons of other schools out there. So I'm flattered every time we get a call from, you know, a guy up in England or in Alaska or in Australia that wants to come here and get his ATP. We had our first foreign officer who's an RAF pilot get his ATP with us last week. So that was pretty cool.
Matt went up there. I didn't. And I know roughly where you're located, but where exactly are you located? MIL-2 ATP, yeah, that is.
So, we are in the same town as Seymour Johnson Air Force Base. The name of the town is Goldsboro, North Carolina. We are about, as the crow flies, 3 miles north of the Seymour Johnson Air Force Base runway. So oftentimes we share our traffic pattern with the Strike Eagles that are entering the traffic pattern for Seymour Johnson, which is kind of neat.
And the mighty KC-135.
Yeah. Be careful. Be careful, Chris. Be careful.
No, you guys are preempting me. I was going to say, we also traffic pattern with 135s and with OV-22s up from Pope, which is pretty cool to see one of those guys hovering in the, you know, next to the runway as you're doing a touch and go.
One of the things that kind of interests me is guys like you who obviously you have an airline job, you're retired military, you have MIL-2 ATP, which obviously has multiple employees, multiple clients. How do you find your motivation on a day-to-day basis to keep just plugging it? Like, okay, so you get back from a long trip, maybe for United, where you had a red eye in there and you're kind of off the clock and you've got work to do. How do you do it?
Well, one, I am one of the few people in the world that is blessed to only need about 4 hours of sleep a day. So that certainly helps.
I would love to.
Yeah, trade you. I need my eight.
Sometimes it's a curse, like especially if you're doing the red eyes. What time did you get up? 12 hours ago. It's time to go to work. I just find that I am a much healthier person if I'm productive. And I will say that probably the last year I was in the Air Force and what led me to eventually decide to retire was I just felt like I was no longer and I have to use caution here. I was an F-15 instructor pilot. I was running an op squadron for almost the last year over in England. So certainly I was doing the Lord's work, as we said, but I wasn't, it was no longer something that I took great pleasure in doing. So you know as well as I do that if you have a love and a passion for your job, it's like having a hobby that you get paid to do. And that's really how I see all of this. Every time, even, you know, in United, certainly flying the Airbus is not flying the F-15, but man, every time we taxi on the runway, I'm giddy like a schoolgirl. I just can't wait to go flying. So I think that's it, really. It's finding your motivation is really about finding a job that you love and then putting everything you have into it.
I think one of the biggest things that I saw while I was up there, too, is you just had a passion for teaching. Like, literally, you were a teacher, not just an instructor, actually taking some pride in what you were able to teach other pilots was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think one of the things I was a booger eating fape, as they say. And one of the things that was big in the Air Force back then was trying to get away from teaching by fear, sarcasm, and ridicule. That's certainly a lesson I took to heart. And then as I moved on to be an instructor of the Strike Eagle, a great guy named Kit Acker said that you weren't a good instructor unless you could teach 3 or 4 different ways of doing the same thing. And so that was the challenge, was not just being able to say, well, here's what the book says, here's how you should do it, but figuring out how a student learns and then teaching to that student's abilities. So certainly that's something I have always tried to do regardless of where I'm teaching.
That's awesome. So let me ask you this. You see a ton of military guys coming through there probably. What's some of the normal or trends that you're seeing for military guys coming through the program?
Well, I don't want to get myself in trouble here, but so
good and bad.
Yeah. So, you know, the great thing about military pilots is guys show up prepared. You know, we certainly, because it is a very condensed course, and in our course, you're not buying the check pilot. You show up and you take a check ride. So if you aren't prepared, it certainly is to your detriment. So when guys show up, it actually makes the teaching, the flying part, easier because guys are flying the airplane and they're not worried about V speeds and they're not worried about silly stuff that they should have already memorized. So certainly I appreciate that our military clients show up prepared and motivated. And then, you know, I break it down by what airplane guys come from. For tanker guys, I know that keeping this little bitty airplane on the center line is a problem only because of what you're used to doing. So taxiing is one of the emphasis items for tanker guys from the time you release the brakes and start rolling till, you know, lining up on the center line of the runway. But translating that to later on, tanker guys typically don't have problems landing because you haven't had a HUD your whole life. You understand that you have to look at the departure end of the runway and use your peripheral vision to assess your sink and flare. And that's something the strike wheel guys don't do because they've had a velocity vector their whole life where you simply put it on the end of the runway at 3 degrees nose low, and then you assess the winds and you pull the power based on the winds. And really, that's really your only thought process, your weight and the winds. And so teaching strike wheel guys to land can certainly be a challenge.
Not to mention the fact that you're transitioning to sitting probably 3 feet off the ground.
Right.
And to a airspeed that's just above what you guys might classify as a turtle running through the air.
Right. Yeah, certainly the landing speed of the Seneca, I'm sure, is well below the stall speed of the KC-135. So it's certainly and like you said, you're about 50 feet lower, not 50, quite 50, but 30 feet lower. So that's a challenge. But honestly, one landing and tanker guys usually overcome that pretty quick. So, you know, you teach it to each type of Air Force pilot has its challenges. You know, there's the rotor guys too. You tell them to add power, and because they usually have the collective in their right hand, it means pull it backwards. So in the flare, you're like, add power, and they go to idle. That, you know, that's a challenge. So
sure,
we try and preemptively teach to the most common errors that folks make, and then we're very attentive to make sure that we don't put ourselves in a position, you know, where we could damage the airplane or hurt somebody. So
you talked a lot about the military guys out there. What are you guys seeing with restrictive ATPs? How are you guys handling that? A new little wrinkle in the mix that the FAA has put out there.
On the network, we've seen some flight schools not doing it.
Yeah, we looked into that because we saw it on the network too. And, you know, we with great success, put several restricted guys through with no problems and no hiccups at all. I mean, it's addressed in the FARs. We talked to the examiners about it. And we do use four different examiners. So, again, like I said, you're not paying for the examiner to show up and give you the rubber stamp. We use different examiners and we've had great success with all four of them. But we, you know, we certainly talk to the examiner about the candidate, the ATP pilot, before the check ride. We make sure that everything is ironed out before a person even shows up for the course. So that when you show up, it's a matter of some quick administrative paperwork. And then, you know, we do ground ops and we go flying. So I don't understand why schools are having a problem with it. Quite frankly, I'm happy they're having a problem with it because they're steering people toward us.
Well, it sounds like it's good business practice to know the ins and outs of the FAR so you can cater to the largest clientele available.
And that's where Brittany's coming in, I think, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have a pretty good relationship with the FISDO out in Greensboro. If we have a question, we simply call them and we get the FAA interpretation. So there's no... Well, I think it's this. We always have the answer, and you know we are very good about emailing them so that they reply back and we have it in writing. So there's just no guessing games. We, you know, when we don't know, we get the answer from the FAA. Yeah, perhaps that's an advantage too of being a 141 school, is the FAA has to take our calls.
So we're seeing on the network a ton. Everyone who did the mad dash to get their written done probably a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, we're coming up on that 24-month deadline. What do you foresee the next few months looking like?
I think if guys haven't already booked their ATP with a school somewhere, they're behind. Because simply put, there are not enough examiners out there to cover all of the folks that have a written test that's going to expire. And that's just a fact. The examiners are allowed to do two check rides a day. And we have examiners booked all the way out through August already. We have stopped taking reservations for the last 2 weeks of July. We're just not willing to, you know, have the weather go bad or we're not going to put someone in a position of it's now August 1st and you didn't get done because the weather was bad. So the real limiting factor is going to be examiner availability. And, you know, I'm guilty of it too. As a strike eagle pilot, my mantra was nearest hottest threat or, you know, close rocks versus far rocks. And if it wasn't something that I had to do today, unfortunately, sometimes it got put off. And there are a lot of guys that are not going to get their ATPs done simply because they are waiting until they can take leave to schedule it. And they really should schedule it and then make sure they get the leave to get it done.
Yeah, I think Matt and I both see that just in the network is amazingly a bunch of type A personalities who do a great job at learning their craft, honing their skill, and executing that skill set on a daily basis, procrastinate. I know I was one of them. I could tell you some stories about me delaying just getting my multi-engine commercial because of my own stupidity as a child, a 26-year-old child, but a child nonetheless. And I feel that it did negatively affect me moving forward in my career on the civilian side of that. One of the things that I always recommend, guys, is, hey, even if you're not going to do it, just go out there and try to get a plan together. And that's the way I see it, is it's critical to make the phone call, talk to these people, see what's going on, see if you can see what information you can glean from them before you go out and make the decision to put it off, or you say, oh man, I got to get this done now. And it's you pretty much summed it up right there. Like, hey, these dudes are putting it off, and it's only going to come back to bite them in the ass pretty bad.
Right, and you know as well as I do, if you do put it off and you unfortunately your test expires, well, now you have to do the CTP. And so the minimum cost that I've seen out there for CTP is about $5,000, but that doesn't include transportation to and from and lodging. So, I mean, easy, at minimum, you're talking about a $6,000 course. And, oh, by the way, that course is a week. So if you're putting it off because you can't take leave, well, now you're going to have to take an extra week of leave, and it's going to cost you $6,000 more.
Yeah, for sure. So, I see where you're coming from. Chris, you gave us a ton of great information, and there are so many other questions out there by the network that we could probably sit and talk to you for probably 2 or 3 hours and just go through every single question that the network has, and we'd probably cover about 10% of it. And if you guys want more questions, you're going to have to get a hold of Chris up at Mil 2 ATP. At least that's what it sounds like to me, because Matt and I don't have the answers, but it sounds like Brittany and Chris can really help you out. So moving away from some of the stuff that the network is looking forward or for with just going to get their ATP, and asking more about what you do just to continue that process of getting guys trained up to go fly for the airlines and continuing to go fly for the airlines yourself. When do you find yourself most productive? Like what time of day or when you're doing? I know it's kind of a silly question, but I always find it to be very interesting.
Yeah, that is a good question, because like I said earlier, I'm one of those few people that only sleeps 4 hours.
4 hours, yeah, exactly. That's why I'm curious about that.
I find that I am most productive at about 3 o'clock in the morning. I hate to admit it. That's crazy. I'll get out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'll come downstairs and shoot, man, I did my master's thesis over the course of about a week from 3 to 7 in the morning.
Damn, man. So, well, you can join Matt Swee at the early bird dinner or the early breakfast down in Del Boca Vista.
We'll just be texting each other in the morning.
Don't look for me after 9 o'clock to have a beer though. Cause
yeah. No, that's okay. I'll make up for all you guys with the at post 9 o'clock beers.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So Chris, another question that I find to be very informational to myself and others out there. Who do you define as one of the key mentors in your life? Who kind of really guided you along the path that you would say you're set on now?
You know, I think I use my dad as a role model for a lot of things. He was very much an entrepreneur, very much a businessman. But, you know, I moved away from home when I was 18 years old, never went back. And because he was in Costa Rica and I was in the military moving around the world, you know, I've always tried to find a mentor everywhere I've been. And this may sound cheesy, but I think it's really important that people have a financial mentor, a spiritual mentor, a business mentor, whether it be because you're in the military or because you own a personal business. One of the guys that I really looked up to for a lot of those items was a guy named Ben Cleveland, Grover Cleveland. He was my squadron commander when I was at Booger Eaton FAPE. I was his exec, TUI. But that guy was really squared away in more ways than one. Great pilot, a great parent, a devoted husband and Christian. And, you know, I call him still. I actually had dinner with him a couple of nights ago. And it's such a small world that I was talking to Ben about what I'm doing now. And he said, hey, do you know Albie? And I was like, you're kidding me, right? So yeah, Ben and Albie go way back too. So, you know, guys like that, that are just not just confident, but really squared away. And it's obviously and evident that they're authoritative figures when they talk. So I always try and seek people like that out and ask them for their advice.
Since you have a lot of the network is probably 50% active duty transitioning to Guard Reserve into the airlines, is there anything that you would have done different in the path you took to entrepreneurship, into the commercial airlines, retirement, other than just getting out a little bit earlier? I know that was your specific path, but is there anything else that you would recommend to people who were you 10 years ago?
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize this until I had already made up my mind that I was getting out, but a really smart 4-star that mentored me for a while I was over in USAFE said in private, and he will probably never say it in public, he said every single person in the Air Force should be in some state of transition from the Air Force because every career ends. So you should always have a plan B. I think what I see a lot, a very common question I see on the network is, holy crap, what do I do about my logbook? And I think, you know, that certainly caused me a lot of consternation as well. And I think I would probably, if I could go back in time and say, I'm gonna do this one thing differently, and I would have started filling out a logbook from the time I started pilot training. I would have put every single sortie in there, and I wouldn't have lost, for a guy that only sleeps 4 hours a day, for me to say I lost sleep over that, that really means something.
I would have done that too. I still have every 781, even from the very first intro tweet flight, but man, none of it's in a logbook.
Yeah, I've got those too. But, you know, I ended up, when I was over in England, I would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and very dutifully 2 or 3 hours a day for, I don't even know how long it took me, but I was a FAPE. So sometimes I flew 3 times a day, and I did 6 flying assignments back to back to back. So there's a lot of line item entries that I put into an electronic JIP spreadsheet. And, you know, there's a lot of questions out there on the network. So like, what do I do with my student time? How do I log this? How do I, you know, I would have asked those questions early on from a smart airline HR rep or an airline pilot, and I would have had the right stuff already filled out. It would have been easy.
Yeah, I think almost all of us can kind of look back and think that there was some one of those things that we needed. I agree with you, man. I did not keep as tight of a logbook as I needed to do. And I think you see that effect going forward. And I think it's speaking of cumulative effects and kind of the way you see things from the past now looking forward to the future, where do you see Mil 2 ATP in 6 months, a year going forward? How do you see that? How do you see Mil 2 ATP evolving and continuing to be of assistance now that the crush is really here with these guys needing their ATPs?
Well, you know, our first and foremost, we're going to get as many guys their ATPs as we can. We are obviously a client-centered business. And so if guys contact us and we have room on the schedule, we will absolutely do our best to get them flying. We've actually bought another twin and have got 2 more instructors in the pipeline training, so we can try and accommodate. I mean, just here at Seymour Johnson, there's so many guys between the tanker squadron and the F-15 squadrons that will be busy through August easily. But my concern more than that is, what then? And so one of the things that we're working on right now is an agreement with CAE Sim Center to start doing CTP. So we'll actually have a first. I don't want to divulge everything here, but we'll be doing, I hope, and it, you know, it's up right now, it's up at the FAA, but I hope that we'll be doing a CTP and ATP as a combined course. I know there are certainly companies offering that where you do it all in the sim. So we'll be doing the CTP academics here. We'll be doing 6 hours in the sim in a big class C or D sim. And then we'll get the rest of the time in a Redbird sim that matches our airplane. So then when you go do your ATP, you'll already have 4 hours in that basically type. So it'll make the ATP transition a lot easier. I look forward to doing that. I hope to start that on August 3rd. And we're in the process right now of getting the agreement in writing with CAE and working out all the logistics to make that happen. But it's going to be an awesome course. It's actually going to be a 5-part course. It'll include the written test and test prep. We'll have our own A&E in the flight school. He's asked to set up an office in our flight school. So that's four of the five steps. And for the fifth step, you're going to have to wait until it becomes official. I can't just divulge everything just yet.
Absolutely, man. We don't want you to. We want bated breath. We wait.
We want to have you back on the the podcast.
You'll have to interview me.
Hopefully you'll use TPN to announce it when it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome stuff, man. We love to hear the kind of growth from the really truly organic. Hey, this is where I started. This is where I'm going to end up. That's so cool. I hope it motivates a lot of guys out there to think, as you said, what's your backup plan? What happens if this doesn't happen? I know I've taken a lot of people, and like you said, really having mentors everywhere, I've taken a lot of what they've said to heart, and knowing that that's true. And I think Chris really nailed it there with all of what he said. And I take away a lot, especially that, hey, if this doesn't work, what else do I got going on for me? And that's the part that, whether it's going to get your ATP tomorrow, or whether it's, hey man, maybe I should start a little side gig here just in case I can't go flying anymore. I think those are all good words of wisdom we should adhere to.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. You know, I do have to get in one more shameless plug though.
Plug.
Don't work yourself to death. Find a hobby, find something you're passionate about, find an organization that you can belong to. I'm also on the national chair for the Red River Valley Association, formerly the Red River Valley Fighter Pilots Association. And so one of the things we do is give back to the local community. And because I own a business, we're able to do that a little more easily. So coming up in March, we're going to have the fourth OG from Seymour Johnson, the entire group out, where we're going to give the families rides in airplanes for guys that are rats. It'll be a big recruiting event, not just for the River Rats, but for hopefully for general aviation in the local community as well. So, you know, a lot of guys certainly have a plan A, come up with a plan B and a plan C, but take the time to give back to your community and do something that you're passionate about.
That's awesome. I think that really sums up the whole Pilot Network's way of saying, hey, pay it forward, because that's exactly what that is. That's really cool, man. Well, Chris, we can't thank you enough for joining us, taking time out of your busy schedule, but apparently you have more time than the rest of us because you only sleep 4 hours a night. So at least you got that going for you. We really want to say thank you again for joining us and for really sharing with the Pilot Network what they have to do to get to that next step and keep moving forward. We can't wait to have you on again once we can divulge the big fifth, the fifth wheel over there, or the big fifth, release of what's going to happen with MIL2 ATP.
And I just want to give my own personal thanks to both you and Brittany for just running a really professional program. It was an awesome experience.
Well, we were certainly very happy to have you up here. Flattered that you drove all the way up from Florida. So send more of your friends. Certainly we've got slots for them. We'll treat them right.
And before we let you go, Chris, where can people find you?
Yeah, man, the easiest thing to do is to send an email to contact@MIL2ATP.com. Either Brittany or I will get that, and we'll respond back within a day.
Cool. And you can find us at thepilotnetwork.org, and we hope to hear from you guys soon.
Awesome. Thanks again, Chris. Well, for Matt and Adam, that was another episode of the TPN podcast. Can't wait to join you again. Who knows what's coming in the future? Fly safe, everybody.